disclosure, I want to say that I am a resident and taxpayer in Kenosha and a parent of a sixth grader at Bullen Middle School. I'm also an associate professor of education at Carthage College in Kenosha and therefore have a lot of experience with various KUSD schools through research projects, fieldwork, student teaching placements, interviewing KUSD personnel for this radio program, and through alumni of Carthage who now teach in KUSD schools. I also served on the KUSD School Board Personnel and Policy Committee from 2008 to 2010, while Mr. Jacobs also served on the same committee, and while Mrs. Stevens was on the board. Mr. Garcia participated last year in this forum, which I moderated. I have not met Mr. Gordon before today. The format for our program will be as follows. Each candidate will have 1 minute to introduce her or himself and tell us why they are running and their qualifications for the position of school board member. After that, I will ask a series of questions, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer. I will give a 15-second nonverbal warning as time is running out. Please adhere to the time limit as well as you can. If there is extra time in your 2 minutes, I might ask a follow-up question or ask for clarification. The order of candidate answers will rotate with each question, so each candidate will have a chance to answer for second, third, or fourth. If you have time for more than 4 questions, I will start the cycle over again. At the end of our time, each candidate will have the chance to give a closing or summary statement. We'll start with introductions and opening statements. You will have 1 minute each. And we'll start with Tony Garcia.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'd like to thank you for inviting me this afternoon. I'm Tony Garcia. I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for about 14 years. At this point, I'm a teacher at Zion Middle School. The reason I'm running is because I was educated here in Kenosha. I understand the problems at the KUSD, and also my expertise as a teacher, I can come in and I can forward information in reference to what is the needs in our classrooms, what is the needs of our administrators in it. And my experience has really updated me to listen to the concerns that the other district has. And my background would be I would be a good candidate for this position.
Okay, thank you. And next is Lance Gordon.
Thank you, Karen. My name is Lance Gordon, and I look to bring a fresh perspective onto the school board. The main reason I'm running is to bring individuality back to the board. In this race, I have no running mates, no ties to groups or parties, and no agenda. I'm here strictly to try to do what's right for the students, the staff, and the administration. I'm 19. I'm a lifelong Kenosha resident. I'm a graduate of St. Joe's in 2014. I've served 2 terms on the Mayor's Youth Commission. I'm a student here on the campus of Gateway in the nursing program, and I'm employed both at Woodman's and the Kingfish. Again, my goal is to bring individuality back to the board, a fresh perspective, and do what's right for our students, staff, and administration.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Jacobs.
Good afternoon. I want to thank you for having us to this forum. It's a great opportunity. Just want to say my name is Todd Jacobs. I work at AbbVie in North Chicago. I'm about a 17-year resident in Kenosha. My son graduated from ITA Academy. My granddaughter is a junior at Bradford High School here in Kenosha. I have served 2 terms on the Personnel Policy Committee, as Karen had stated. I think my background in business, community involvement as far as the Exchange Club, I'm immediate past president. Working with child abuse prevention, also a former scout leader for about 9 years. And I think that with the fact that my wife and I adopted our granddaughter has given me a perspective that gives me a unique view as to some of the challenges that our school districts are facing. And I'm here running to make this district a better opportunity for all of its students.
And Mrs. Stevens.
Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for having us here this evening. And I understand this is going to air on Saturday morning before the election, so I'm really excited to have this opportunity to reach out to some people that maybe we missed along the way. I'm running for school board again. This will be my 4th term if I'm reelected. I have a lot of great experience throughout my years on the school board, some of them which would be expanding Indian Trails, and passing a $51 million referendum. We just recently did the sports facilities referendum. I would like to see us continue to work with the individual choice schools that we have, things like the Indian Trail Academy, biotech program. I'd like to see us expand some more with what we can do with Lakeview and the STEM programs, also with K-Tech and some of those other programs. So that's the reason I'm running again. I want to keep working on that and continue the good work that we've begun and expand it. Thank you.
Okay. Now we will begin with our questions. We're starting with in alphabetical order by last name, and then we'll rotate through that order so it's a different person answering first each time. So the first question I have is, how do you think we should evaluate teachers in our district? Some states and districts have moved toward using standardized test results as part of teacher evaluations. Should KUSD use test results to evaluate teachers? And if so, how then would you evaluate teachers in untested subjects such as PE and electives or grade levels such as kindergarten? And Mr. Garcia, you get to go first.
Well, the first thing, evaluating teachers, we have to look at their credentials, make sure they're certified through the state. And once we did, we make sure we give them all the information that they need. I would personally go into classrooms and evaluate them, how the performance is. The only that I would also would like to survey the teachers, have the students survey the teachers to make sure that the students and the teachers are in the right path of learning. I'm sure a lot of teachers do learn from the students and the students learn from the teachers. But the point is that do make sure that, you know, once we evaluate the teachers, there's a lot of process that we could do this. But my main concern is to make sure we evaluate the teachers to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do, make sure they're up to the curriculum, and make sure that they have a good class management. They have not only good class management, but interventions where they know that some of their students are falling behind or falling to the gaps, make sure that, you know, we bring them up to par where it's supposed to be.
And so on the question of using standardized test results, is that?
Definitely. That plays an important part using standardized tests, because every year they take that test, so we'll be able, as they continue the grades level, the teacher will be able to see where the students are in mm-hmm. the test. I think that's very important.
So what about teachers whose subjects are not tested?
That's a good question. What I would do, geez, you got me there. Sorry, I apologize for that.
Okay, you can address it in some other time if you have extra time.
Definitely.
Okay, and the next person to answer that same question is Lance Gordon.
Sure, thanks, Karen. As far as evaluation of teachers, as a recent student, really, data is a very powerful thing. When I talk about data, I'm talking about surveys for both the students, the parents, and the peers of the teachers. You know, there's a lot of different components that goes into being a teacher. Teachers interact every day with our students. They interact with other teachers who may be part of their department or their heads of administration, as well as these kids go home and they talk to their parents and they tell them all about the experience they had that day at school because their parents want to know how their kids are doing in school. And so, with that being said, that data, that survey, I think would be a great tool. And really, there's no substitute for a hands-on experience. Having an administrator go into a classroom and observe it and maybe help and point out some tips, they say some things they're doing well, some things they're not doing well. But with as far as the standardized test aspect to that question, as someone who's taken many standardized tests, I find it that for a student who can learn how to take a standardized test, it gives them an advantage, and it really kind of skews the information at that point. And so I don't think standardized tests are that reliable. I think it's more so about the data that the students, the parents, and the peers, the teachers provide, and the hands-on experience that our administrators would get by going into the classrooms and observing them.
Okay. And Mr. Jacobs.
Karen, great question. Having just completed my second master's degree at Keller Grad School, one way that they evaluated their instructors was they had the center president come in and observe several times during different classrooms. One, they were observing not only the teacher interaction, as far as interaction with the students, how engaged they are, how engaged they engage the students, testing results, because that's only one piece. And the other side of the coin, too, is also one-on-one meetings as well as interaction with parents as far as our grade schools and high schools are concerned. So I think you have to look at teachers from a whole package, really, not just one piece, because I think if you look at tests, that gives a very, very, very narrow view. And I think you get a much better idea when you view and evaluate interactions as far as students, parents, and such like that.
So would you advocate using standardized tests for some part of that package?
I think that's one piece that's important, because obviously that's how you're going to measure the students. But at the same time, I think it's important, one, to evaluate the students, have them get feedback. You have teacher conferences. Certainly have feedback from the parents that way, and counselors. And I think it's extremely helpful, because I know my family has had situations where we have not gotten the input that we needed, that should have been. And I think allowing the parents to have some input to that, too, I think you get a much better rounded view.
Okay, thank you. And Mrs. Stevens.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. As far as evaluation of a teacher, I think there should be the process that we use at this point. We have things in place where the administrators go in and they sit in the classroom and they observe the teacher. They do a full evaluation. It's broken down into different sections, too. They don't just go on that alone. They sit down, they meet with the teachers, they have these conversations. I think looking at test scores alone would not be appropriate for anyone, because a child can be having a good or a bad day, and if you base everything on those testing scores at that given moment, doesn't mean that the teacher hasn't been able to reach them in other ways. If you included other opportunities for hands-on learning in those observations, which I'm referring to, that's fine too. I think with any type of testing, if you do, one of the things we use in our district is that MAPS testing piece, and I think that's real life, that's real time. So as Tony was mentioning about testing and how a teacher would use that. So if you have a child that's a high flyer and tests really high all the time, I would be looking at those test scores going, okay, what do I need to do to challenge that student in my classroom? The other piece would be if I notice somebody's way behind, okay, what do I do to create that plan to help bring that child up to speed? So I think testing has its spot, but it's not exclusively done for evaluation. There are so many factors that come into play there, and I think we have a pretty good system in place, and I think that feedback is crucial from the administrators to the teaching staff in order to get the improvement we need all around.
Okay, thank you. Now we're moving on to question two, so we have a slightly different order. We're going to start with Lance Gordon. The question that I have is, how will KUSD continue to hold on to quality teachers despite possible budget cuts in coming years? How will they compete with other districts when looking for new and qualified teachers?
Thank you, Karen. And that's actually a great question. It's one that's come up many times during the selection cycle. My personal opinion on that is it's about the environment we create for our teachers. If we create an environment in which teachers want to come because we're encouraging them to further their education, we're encouraging them to move from that four-year degree to their master's to better prepare them to teach our students, they're gonna want that if we give them some type of incentive. And part of that question you just asked was about the budget cuts. Right now, one of the hot-button items would be the health care packages and benefits packages for our teachers, and there's an opportunity that we can save a good deal of money. And the question then comes up, what are we going to do with that money? And I'm all for putting it into that program to minimize that gap, or to make a little bit more of a gap between a teacher who has a master's degree and a teacher who has a four-year degree, to create that incentive for them to move on in their own personal education to better our students.
Okay. And Mr. Jacobs.
Great question, Karen. Thank you. as just completing my second master's, like I stated, I believe that learning is a lifelong journey, as it were, and teachers or anybody really in that community should be no different. As far as retaining teachers, I think we need to look at our programs and basically everything in our budget every single year to evaluate, one, what's working, what's not working. If there's things that aren't working, then maybe we can use some of the funds that are toward those things and scale that into, one, possibly merit incentives for teachers. I'm totally for that. Same time, any kind of cost savings that we can implement or constant improvement to make the district more responsive. Not only that, survey our industry, local industry. We've got a lot of that around the Kenosha area here, and find out what employers are actually looking for as far as skills in our students, and then gear our strategies toward that. And I think that way that, just like we've done in ITA Academy, where we've taught at a level much, much higher than any other high school in the area, that has actually attracted students and actually gotten the attention of students outside this district. And I think that's a hidden gem in our district. And that's one way to attract folks to come to this district.
Okay. And Mrs. Stevens.
So how do we hold on to qualified teachers and attract new teachers in the areas where we have more competition, I think is what it is, because the market as such has really created a difficult situation. That would be there's a lot fewer students going into the teaching profession based on all the different things that have happened over the last few years at the state level. So what I would continue to do is reach out to those teachers that are in those high needs areas, STEM, very, especially at that high level of learning, like someplace like Lakeview. You have to really look closely at those areas and see what you're going to do to make sure you shore up and you keep those teachers. And we have to look at overall our salaries across the district, not just one area, but across the district. And we have to compare to other markets. So we're going to do the market study. We're going to look at how does that look when we break it down. Our teachers make what their average pay is, what they're making in districts that are right nearby us. I have teachers that are getting offers from other districts. They're trying to steal teachers away. The competition is there. We must address this now. We saved over $3 million on the health insurance package. We have $400,000 unallocated. We have 2.6 from the long-term care. We also have some vacancy factors that'll come out to the end of the year at about 1.6. And then we also have $250,000 on top of that, which was going to be used if we would have filled those vacancies for health insurance. So we've got the money. The board needs to look at that right away, and we need to get competitive, and we need to make sure when we hire in new teachers that we honor the fact if we have a 10-year teacher here that they're not being paid more than the other teachers, because that can create a really bad situation. Thank you.
Okay, and last but not least, Mr. Garcia.
Karen, yeah, I'm going to give you my personal experience when I started teaching at the Racine Unified School District. I remember my first day I walked in, and it says, here's the curriculum, here's the books, and I'll see ya. I was lost. I said, wow, why do I want to become a teacher with this kind of treatment I'm going to get? That's the experience that I went through, and I want to make sure that new teachers, don't go through that, because I know how frustrating it is. And I know once the teacher after the first, third, second, or third year, they don't want to teach anymore. What I'll do is to make sure that when a teacher comes to the district, we give them all the resources that they need, all the help that they need. We get mentors for them to make sure they have any problems in the class, how to do it. Most teachers come in and they have to be very knowledgeable of class management. If you don't have class management in the classroom, you're lost, because you really got to engage the students in it. And it was really frustrating for me, after teach 2 years like that. The third year, I kindly went into the group, because then I knew what I had to do. Also salary plays an important part. I understand Racine are paying the teachers more than Kenosha at this point. I'm in Illinois, they're paying more. A district is known what it echoes through the community. We're going to make sure that the ECHO will actually speak for a district. A lot of teachers, you know, come to Kenosha because, you know, the pay is good, all the resources are there that you need to continue to become successful. And, you know, I would look at that and make sure that everything is in place for new teachers coming in and to be, you know, and make sure that the pay is there that they need to succeed, because most of them do come in because they want to have a career in education. You know, I just concur with what Rebecca was saying, to make sure that, you know, especially with, you know, getting a higher education, you know, the more money you, the higher education that you have, the more money you make. And we want to make sure that all the teachers are to that.
Okay, thank you. And just a reminder to our listeners, I'm Karen Sconzert, your Education Matters host for this Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum. We're here with KUSD board candidates, Tony Garcia, Lance Gordon, Todd Jacobs, and Rebecca Stevens. Question number three, we're going to start with Mr. Jacobs. Recent legislation allows people with job experience in certain subjects to forego a teaching license in order to teach. Should this legislation change how the district hires teachers for these positions? Should the hiring of non-certified teachers be up to the discretion of the district or individual schools?
Well, I know certainly with programs that I've had, as far as higher education level, there were some instructors that were business professionals that were not necessarily licensed and lent a very, very valuable insight to teaching and real-world practical knowledge. I think as far as education is concerned, I think you have to have a certain level of, certain high level of credentialed, educated educators, but at the same time, I think you can round out that, that playbook, as it were, for our students and offer them, especially like in Lakeview and things like ITA Academy and some of these other charter schools, where they can provide an insight into what's actually going on in the business community that maybe we might not be able to offer if, you know, if it's just from the education side. I think that brings a practical side too. And so that's where an adjunct type instructor is very valuable. I think you still need to be have some credentialed instructors to guide the students along, but I think the other side also rounds out the full experience and gives them a better rounded education.
Okay. Should it be the discretion of the individual school and principal, or is it should it be a district policy whether or not you can hire an uncertified
Honestly,
teacher?
I think I would say it would probably be a district-wide. You set that as a strategy. Now, one, you survey your industry around the area, and we've got a lot of it around the Kenosha area. In fact, high-tech industry. Survey them what they need, and at the same time, round out our opportunities. And I think that's where you set your strategy and decide which direction you want to go, and then start striving for that.
Okay, thank you. And the next person to answer that is Mrs. Stevens.
Well, as far as credentialing for teaching staff goes, I think that we need to have a high level of credentials. I think that that's been one of the strengths over many, many years in the state of Wisconsin, and it's proven to be a good thing based on the outcome. So are there areas that are hard to fill that we need to look at maybe a different approach for attracting and adjusting things in order to fill those areas? Yes, there definitely are areas where we need to look at that. I still think the credentialing is extremely important, but if we go back and we look at the way that we and bring our teachers on board to begin with and that process, and then the way that we pay them with their salary increases and those types of things, I think we are going to continue to reach those teachers that we need. One of the things that at the college level, as you know, is you're trying to teach and prepare teachers to be ready for what they have to actually teach, and that's changed a lot too. Mm-hmm. So I know you guys have your frustration level, and that all comes together, and that's all working together with our Gateway Technical Colleges, our Carthage, our Parkside, UWM, all those things, communicating as a district, what do we need? How do we work together to get those credentialed teachers in our buildings at that high level? Now, outside of the school, and I think this is one thing that KUSD used to do that I think is very positive, is having those opportunities for apprenticeships, maybe through businesses. And having some of our students at that higher level of education at the high school where they've earned their credits and they have maybe some time at their senior and junior year where they can go and actually have that hands-on experience and have that apprenticeship opportunity too. So I guess that's kind of the way I would look at it, and I think it needs to be district-wide.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Garcia?
I concur with Rebecca. I feel it should be district-wide. My experience, international business that I, graduated from Carthage, I did travel international business for a while. Then I became a teacher. I came in with a background of a business, international business. And then, credentials plays an important part because I changed my career and I had to get my credentials to become a teacher. I came in as a teacher, but I also came in as a business person, which, I can add to my curriculum. I can use, especially if you're teaching a business class, you could add your personal experience that you have had as a as an international business and put that part of your curriculum, which, I think that, I'm very open to that. It all depends on the individual. If we look at the corporate world, a lot of corporate world employees are coming to become teachers, and teachers are leaving to the corporate world. The background plays an important part on the teacher, and I do, believe it should be a district-wide, and credentials play an important part.
Okay, thank you. And last but not least, it's Lance Gordon.
Thank you, Karen. So if I can just reiterate the question, should we allow unexperienced members of our community to come in and teach our students based on their experiences in the real world? And I think that our teachers have gone to school and have credentials to teach, and we can't undermine that. With that being said, these individuals who have this experience doesn't mean that they're not good for anything. They can be a very powerful asset in making sure our students come away with that best experience and get the most out of it. And when I say that, I look at it more as we have a teacher to teach you the fundamentals, the beginning, the steps to it. And someone can come in and maybe fill in a couple gaps that a student may miss as a guest speaker or whatever it may be. But there's ways we can incorporate that experience into our lesson plans that would really just take our students to that next level to make sure that they do get that best experience and they get the most out of it. And as far as if it should be school to school or district-wide, I think it needs to be district-wide, strictly based on consistency. If we have a consistent message throughout our school system, a consistent message that we try to preach to our homes, that's what brings success. It doesn't matter if we're talking about a school district, if we're talking about sports, or if we're talking about raising a family. Consistency is key.
Okay, thank you. And for question four, Mrs. Stevens will be first. So recent reports have shown that Wisconsin has the largest gap in black-white graduation rates in the entire country, worse than Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama, among others. What would you as a school board member do to address the achievement gap that exists throughout KUSD and leads to these disparate rates between black and white graduation?
Yeah, this has been a topic that I've seen over the years, obviously, on the school board, actually has gotten worse. But I think there's a correlation between many things that happen in our society. The poverty rate for our African-American students is much higher. If we look at the percentage of incarcerated parents, that's much higher for many of our students. So there's a combination of many things that feed into that. So I have the approach, and I used to work at McKinley Elementary about 12 years ago, and I did home visits and things of that nature. And I think what we need to do, and I saw what living in poverty and the struggles of single parents and many of the things that our children, the challenges they face before they ever get to the school door. And they come to us many times much further behind because they haven't had as much exposure to reading and things of that nature. So I think We've got some really good programs, a Head Start. We expanded 4K since I've been on the board, and I was really happy to be able to vote to support that. But we also need to work with our nonprofits and our social services departments more closely to try to figure out what we can do to come up with solid plans for each and every one of our students that are in those situations where they need that extra help. The parent that struggles, that has to work two or three part-time jobs just to put food on the table. The student that might not get enough to eat and not sleep well maybe because there's a party in a home that they're living in. So there's so many different social factors and social economic factors. I think we need to have those crucial conversations, sit down, talk about it, and then as a community, embrace the fact that we're going to all work together because it isn't just something that's happening in the schools. Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Garcia.
Yes. One of the things is, you know, closing the gap. You know, I've been hearing closing the gap at least 30 years ago since I was in school. What I would do is, education is 90% at home and 10% at the schools. We're teaching such a different generation of students, and I concur with Rebecca because most of them are disadvantaged at home, poor families and that. But the point is that we got to make sure, what I would do, I'll survey the students, make sure. That's how we're going to find out what's actually going, around them. Survey the teachers, administrators, everybody that has something to do with educating our students at school, survey them so we can get at least a platform going to find out what the problem is. Because, kids don't lie. They tell you what the problem in the classes are. They will not lie to you and say, I see this every day where I teach. I see kids that, they don't want to listen to the teachers anymore. When teachers have to come in and 30% of the time it's discipline, then there's a problem. Instead of sitting down and find out where the problem comes from, most of the teachers, they're not educated to pinpoint what the problem is. They don't know how to educate those students. They try everything their best to do, but because the communication is not there. Also, we got to get the parents involved to make sure to come in. Because, the kids, they go home and they tell the parents what the problems are at the school. We need our community involved. We need our city. We need our county. We need everybody that has to play in education. Our students is important. Like I said, I would survey the students because you'd be surprised what you can learn from the students. And closing the gap, I hope that 10 years from now, we're not dealing with closing the gap. But we're hoping to close the gap, with the next couple of years.
Okay, thank you. And Lance Gordon.
Thank you, Karen. I'd like to first start by making it very clear that the learning gap goes far beyond black and white lines. It goes more towards resources. This includes access to internet, access to books, family's financial state, and even extracurriculars. I know as a student growing up, extracurriculars is what enhanced my learning. Being able to know that for an hour and a half every day after school, I didn't have to worry about school at all. It was about me being with my friends, participating in something, working toward the goal, and then going back after practice and going to work on my homework or whatever that may be. So one thing that I'd like to do is encourage more of that peer-to-peer strategy by creating a peer-to-peer tutoring program that's very set. And some advantages of that would be fostering of friendship, the fostering of leadership, and new learning avenues. I know, again, as a student who just recently graduated, there are a lot of times where a teacher could explain something to me 10, 15 times, and I just wouldn't get it. But the first time a fellow classmate told it to me, it clicked. And there's just something about the way, and there's something about peer-to-peer tutoring and peer-to-peer learning that just you associate with them strictly based on your age, and you're with them every day, and you can relate to them a little bit better. And so this structured program that I'd like to bring about, and I'd like to make it district-wide on every level possible because that fosters that consistency I referred to of that last question. And that consistency then fosters structure, and that structure is what our students thrive on.
Okay, thank you. And then Mr. Jacobs.
Karen, great question. Kind of brings me back to the fact that my wife and I adopted our granddaughter out of a terrible situation. And frankly, our society across the U.S. is facing a terrible situation for a number of years, and it's only getting worse. Bottom line is that according to the 2010 census, there were almost 6 million children across the U.S., 6 million kids that were living either with grandparents or relatives out of the home. One, that creates a situation and a dynamic that we have not had to face before. Two, it creates a behavior gap because many, many times these kids, when they're pulled out of way from their parents or caregivers and then put into a situation, whether it be grandparents, foster home, or whatever, many, many times these kids, kind of like a divorce situation where the child internalizes the fact that, geez, what did I do to cause this? And it's not necessarily a racial issue, but certainly that shows up in society, but I think across the board. And many, many times, if you take an interest in these children, find out that what's actually going on at home, just talking to them. And we have to do a much, much better job with that. I know my family has faced challenges with my own granddaughter in high school, and we're certainly not doing enough to help our families and our students get the work that they need to do to be successful. And what that does is that creates a situation where the student eventually starts to give up. And frankly, from my standpoint, that is unacceptable. And as a board member, I will strive and work with everything I have to make sure that all students are successful.
Okay, thank you. So we don't have time for a full two-minute answer, but we have time for everybody to do a one-minute answer to this last question, and then we can do our closing statements. So we're going to start over with our original rotation. Tony Garcia will go first. So this question is, one source of budget reductions in the past year and into the future was the decision of the legislature to take funds for voucher schools out of the pool of state aid to public schools rather than a separate voucher fund, as has been the case in the past. What should be the response of school boards in Wisconsin to this shift of funds from public to voucher schools?
First of all, I don't care much for voucher schools because that takes money out of taxpayers' pocket. You know, cuts are coming, you know, every year. So, you know, we got to make sure that the district is up to date with what's going on in Madison. You know, we got to know, you know, how its effect is going to have at our kids. For example, I understand KUSD has like 70 students in vouchers here, and that's close to $600,000. If I'm correct about that, you know, voucher money, once it goes out, it doesn't come back to the district. Even if the student is there a month because of discipline issues, you know, you got to go back to your home school, the money stays there. So we got to make sure that you know, as a board member, you know, educate myself and to make sure that the money that we're using is used for district, and to make sure that you know, we're up to date whatever policies and laws that they're changing.
Okay, and Lance Gordon?
Thank you. The subject of vouchers and voucher schools is a very hot button item right now across the state. This doesn't just affect us, it affects our entire state as a community. And it's a very difficult decision to talk about. You know, but at the end of the day, as a school district, we have to follow what the state mandates us to do, and we have to fund it how the state mandates us to fund it. And if we as a district don't agree with how the state is having us fund it, then we need to collectively present our case organized to those who are above us in that state legislature. So the key to that, though, is being an organized. We can't have 10 different viewpoints going 10 different ways. We have to collectively form that opinion and present our case to those above us.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Jacobs.
I agree. The idea of vouchers, that is a hot button. Fact is, with the very, very varied dynamic as far as a type of student that we haven't faced before, challenges that we haven't seen, we have to look at our students as most important to abide by the law and fund our schools the best way that we possibly can. But again, focus on the student itself. And there are some situations, and even some parents that I've talked to, where that was the best choice for them. Granted, yes, a portion of that dollar is going to go to that, but there is also a possibility to for the school district to also collect part of that. At the same time, again, looking at the students, we have to do the wisest that we can, but at the same time, focusing on that student, do the best that we can to make our district attractive and the best so that these students don't want to leave.
Okay. And Mrs. Stevens.
Well, I think the key that you and your question addressed, and I think that it's really important to address it from this manner, is first of all, vouchers, the way that it's structured right now, are not healthy for public schools and potentially really are not healthy for the private schools either that are accepting them. I think that with all the cuts to education period across the state, it's created a dynamic of a lot of districts just hanging on by a thread. Now, we've done a lot of good work in KUSD to help offset that, but without the increase in the funding per student, we can only go so far. If we get a bunch, say we get 90 kids that are going out on a voucher, that's three teachers, but it's across the district, so we can't adjust. So we need more funding, a funding increase, and I think the board needs to speak together and send a resolution.
Okay, that is the end of my formal questions, so I would like you each to do a final statement for a conclusion for us. And in the next order of questions, the first person would have been Lance Gordon, so I'm going to let you go first with your closing statement. Try to keep it under 1 minute, and
sure.
See what I do.
Sure, thank you. I'd like to say thank you to Karen for being our moderator today and for WGTD for having all four of us on. And on that same note, I'd like to wish the best of luck to all the other three candidates here. My experience as a recent student in today's day and age is a very great asset that I have, and it's something that no one else can match or take away from me. I plan to bring an individualism to the board, and so that I have no ties to any political parties or groups or candidates or current board members. And a key notion that I've been really focusing my campaign on is that great teams and great boards are made up of great individuals, and I plan to be one of those great individuals. So don't forget to get out and vote on Tuesday, April 5th, and vote Lance Gordon.
Okay, Mr. Jacobs.
Same thing. I want to thank Karen and WGTD for giving us this opportunity. Best of luck to all. Again, the reason I'm running this time around is because the perspective of adopting my granddaughter and seeing the dynamic that has created with these students and how that plays out in high school and some of our other schools, frankly, is a situation that we need all of our students to be a success. And to do that, then we have to do much, much better to do everything that we possibly can to give them that opportunity to be a success. And I think my experience with granddaughter and community and business, I think, lends that. And again, April 5th is the election, and I ask for your vote and your confidence. Vote Todd Jacobs. Thank you.
Okay. And Mrs. Stevens.
Well, thanks, Karen, for having us here. And I'm just going to say I'd like to represent Kenosha Unified as a board member. I'd like to be reelected. I think that we've made a lot of progress over the years. Our graduation rate has increased, so that's a good sign. But there's so much more work to do. And my experience working in as a liaison between the home and the school 12 years ago, I understand those areas of challenge that we face in our public schools that we didn't face, say, 20 years ago. So, for instance, truancy. You can't teach a child if they're not in the classroom. We need to make sure we work to get every child to school and then find out what their needs are and work with them on an individualized plan to create success for each of them. Thank you, and vote for Rebecca Stevens on April 5th.
Thank you. And Mr. Garcia.
Thank you, Karen. I want to thank you and the other candidates. And I wish you guys the best of luck. Like I said before, it's not about me. It's about us. It's about our community. It's about our children. It's about our parents. If elected, I will bring leadership to ensure excellent equality to Kenosha Public Schools. Also, accountability. Make sure we as the school board are accountable to local government and local community. Also, inspiring public confidence, building public confidence in the school district ability to fulfill its mission successfully. The bottom line of all this is taxpayers want reassurance that the school district is a good steward to tax dollars. to represent the students, teachers, and community. Every kid, every school education makes options. And thank you.
All right, thank you. This has been the KUSD School Board Forum with candidates Tony Garcia, Lance Gordon, Todd Jacobs, and Rebecca Stevens. The election is April 5th, Tuesday, and this program will be available for